Hey Wes, my brother, what's up?
I was just wanting to let you know I'd like a Whopper, fries, and a large milkshake, please.
I know that looks pretty good, right? I mean, I could be a Burger King guy maybe someday.
I
But
stole
that's
that joke from Ryan, so I
you
want to
did.
give
I
him
know that
full
was quite
credit.
good of him too. But I think that's either Walmart greeter or Burger King order taker for like a retirement gig someday. What do
You're not old enough to be a greeter yet, but you could
That's
definitely work
true.
at the King, so you're
I
good.
could. Welcome to Burger King. What would you like today?
Yeah,
Yeah,
that's
we don't
right.
have that. No, I want to do McDonald's because then I can say, no, I'm sorry, but the McFlurry ice cream machine's broken.
That's right.
It's like, not that I do that often, but one of the biggest irritations in life maybe is you wait in line for about 12 cars. Oh, I'm sorry, the ice cream machine's down today. They really should put a flag out.
That's right.
There should be like a red flag that's just waving that if the machine's broken, so I don't get in line.
I think if it's down, they should just fly at half mast.
I like that. I'm gonna bring
Yeah.
that up as soon as we get
Okay.
done. Should we do Ryan first, or you want me to make that call right now?
I think we better bring on Ryan and then talk to the King.
Let's do it. We'll talk to the game. All right, let's
All
do
right.
Ryan. All right, brother.
Welcome to Building Wins Live with host, the hybrid road warrior himself, Randy Chafee, and producer-director Wes Wyatt. Whether we're talking about sales, marketing, tech, or industry news, we want to bring you the best tips, tricks, and info to build wins. Now, let's get to the show.
Good afternoon. Thank you for stopping at Burger King. May I take your order, please?
I'll have one dose of Building Wins, please.
I love it. Perfect. Perfect. Hey, I think I could be pretty good at that. That might be a gig someday. That's a great idea of yours.
I call it like I see it, and you just seem like you'd be a suitable role.
I think so. And it'd be way better than because the Walmart greeter thing, the problem with me is people would walk in and ask really stupid questions, and I would give them the real Randy edition of, I don't know, paints. Where would I find paints? I don't know, right there by the sign that says paints. What do you think? That would probably be me, which would probably not last very long. Where would the milk be? I don't know, back in the dairy section, probably. Same place it was the last time he was in, you moron. Yeah, I probably wouldn't do well. I probably wouldn't be good. But well, welcome, Ryan. I appreciate you being on, my friend.
It's my pleasure. Glad to be here. Been looking forward to this for a while, so I'm glad we worked it out.
Well, I am as well, and you gave me the honor of being on your podcast, professionally speaking podcast, a couple weeks ago. I think you dropped it, or last week maybe, and I just really enjoyed our conversation. But before I get that far, because I was going to say how we got to meet each other, which I think is correct. But first, I guess I ought to probably introduce you. I get so excited talking to you. So I got all kinds of stuff wrote down here. You're like author, your book's up on the screen there right now, executive trainer, coach, keynote speaker, professor. And then for the 3.5 minutes a year, your spare time, I guess, what else do you do? I mean,
But I got a few hobbies. I like to be outdoors a lot when I'm not, because what it's like, you're in boardrooms or in companies and in the offices. So I love to get outside. I like to hike. I like to be around in nature a lot. But for the 3.5 minutes, unfortunately, it doesn't leave me a lot of time. But it's not bad. I really do enjoy what I do for a living. I love being around people. I'm kind of a social, like a tribal creature. So it works for me.
It is, and one of the things that's really important to me when I look for guests to be on is people that are about building wins, but also people that love what they do and do what they love. It's a mantra that I use all the time, and it's one that I finish almost every show with, almost anything I write or talk about, because I think it's super important to really love what you do and do what you love, right? It's important to get up every day and have a purpose, a mission, and really just love it. And that doesn't mean, right? It doesn't mean you don't have a bad day or a bad, but I've always said, and somebody else might have said this and I stole it, but if we don't remember who it was, I'm taking it, was, don't let 20 minutes of suck become 20 minutes, or I mean 20 years, or a lifetime of suck, right? I mean, it's 20 minutes. Work through it, and if you're really doing what you love, you'll be able to work your way through that 20 minutes of suck now and then that happens in life, and still love what you're doing, right?
Yeah, I agree with that. There is a little bit, as you're talking, I'm just having a flashback. I had a conversation with a client not long ago. And it seemed like, you know, some people, they don't know, it's almost like a philosophical question. They don't know the line between tolerating like temporary discomfort, or like you said, 20 minutes of suck, versus doing this regularly. And because they feel like it's an obligation, or they don't want to be a quitter, or they don't want to let their parents or their family or whoever has, you know, supported them down, even though it's something that they don't really enjoy. But it's something that they've spent some time getting themselves into. So I find the older I get, and I'm getting old now, Randy, but the older I get,
I also look gray in the beard there. Is that what I see?
I know. It's not fun. It's not fun.
I put the gray in my hair just to make myself look distinguished. I'm only 27, actually.
Well, I could tell. I could tell with the tan. but yeah, the older I get, the more I realize it's there. There's some of the answers to the important questions, you only get them with age. Like when you're, you know, they come with, so if you're fortunate to have a mentor, that's will expedite the learning curve. But for some of us who didn't have one, man, you got to go through things the hard way, and that's okay too. Build some grit. But yeah, it's interesting. 20 minutes of suck is definitely tolerable if the 90% of your day is positive and you enjoy it. But if that's reversed, I mean, at some point you got to go back to the drawing board and revisit the trajectory of what you want your life to be.
You know, that's a great point, Ryan, because, you know, you're right. There's, as I think, the age old being brought up as a quote man, right? And talking now just as men. And I'm sure that I'm not having not grown up a woman, I can't put myself in their shoes, but I'm sure to a lot of degree mothers have that same conversation with daughters and et cetera. But it's like, you can't be a quitter. You just got to stick with it. You got to hang in there. And I think you're exactly right. I think there's something to that, right? Mm-hmm. As long as you don't hit that point where if it's intolerable, mm-hmm. you really got two options, right? Figure out what it is and can I fix it? Because there's enough here still that I want to do, or there is a time to just pull the plug, right?
Mm-hmm. There is a time to, like I said, go back to the drawing board, maybe go down, chart another path. It takes courage to fly in the face of what you believed in and what you've dedicated your time to. But people change, right? So what made you happy in your 20s maybe doesn't make you happy anymore in your 30s. And right. you go down a different path. But I think some folks, unfortunately, like I see it, and they have this mindset that, like I said, they don't want to let people down, and they feel like, and they kind of talk themselves into it, right? Well, I already invested so much time in this, and I'm pretty good at it. And, you know, there's a lot of people who depend on me here, and this and that. But then at the end of, when they're taking their commute to work in the morning, they're thinking to themselves, man, I don't want to go to work today. What can I do to get out of work today? You know what I mean? Like, you don't want to be in that situation either. It's a better quality of life, I would say.
It is. And I can remember back years ago, Ryan, where a lot of years now, where I was, the short period of time that I was out of sales, which most of my life has been in sales, but, and this is how I knew this is where I belonged, because when I was out of sales, I was in a purchasing world and learned a lot, but I realized exactly what you're talking about. It made me think about it. I hated Friday. And why did I hate Friday? Because that meant Saturday's coming. Now that sounds weird, other than, you know why I hated Saturday? Because Sunday was coming. That sounds even weirder yet, right? Except for, because when Sunday comes, that means Monday's coming again. Mm-hmm. And I got to come back to this stuff on Friday that I'm already hating. So all I did was completely destroyed my whole, any time that was maybe a fun time or something away from what I didn't love what I was doing. I destroyed mm-hmm. it all by going into a negative mindset and destroying my whole weekend, just worrying about Monday, and it's Friday at 3 o'clock, right? Mm-hmm. That is a bad position to be, right? And it, but like you said, to speak to your point, it took me 4 years after that still to finally make the move.
Well, yeah, it's not easy. Like people say, and friends or people on the outskirts, outside looking in, would say, what are you doing? Just get out of there. Like, you don't like it, just get out. But when you're in it, it's cloudy, it's foggy, it's easier said than done, especially when you have relationships and there's emotional ties and there's a lot of that. I look back to myself and I was strangely fortunate. Like my background, I was trained. I didn't really have much direction growing up. The only thing I knew was that where I grew up in Southern Ontario and then partially in Western New York, we had to, as part of the education system, do a certain amount of hours of community service. And I don't know how I came upon this, but my community service was working with scouts and some of the like the younger, the youth, you know, between 8 and 12 years old. And a lot of them didn't have parents at home, or they had single parent homes. They didn't have a lot of parental interaction. And when I got to spend time with them, it really like made their day. And I got to help them learn skills and could do things and life skills and such, and go on trips and whatnot. And that for me, I experienced like the joy. I was like, wow, this is fantastic. So I had that going into my career. I'm like, I want to work with people. I want to educate. So I became a teacher, and that's initially how I started. And then I kind of continued because I'm a very ambitious person, and I want, how can I help more? How can I touch more people? How can I, you know, reach more people? So I went to be, I leveled up my education, became a college professor and then university professor. But somewhere along the way, I was on vacation in California. I have a few friends in the Bay Area and Silicon Valley, and they were raising funding. They were pitching for investment. And a lot of my research at the time dealt with persuasive communication and influence and such. So I just, you know, over a lunch, just shared some of my insights of how they should structure the pitch and what wording they should use and how they should deliver it, just, you know, off the cuff. Didn't really think too much of it, but shortly thereafter, they contacted me and said, you got to come back. Like, you got to help. Like, okay, there's a lot of companies who could use your help. And I, to that point, didn't think that was a career path. Like, my guidance counselor never told me, hey, you could be a corporate trainer and a coach. Do you ever think of that? Like, that wasn't a thing.
Right.
So when I said, okay, I'll give it a try, but I don't really know if I'm qualified. And they're like, what are you talking about? You're educated beyond anyone else. We, and my one friend, fortunately, he had already been successful, had a company of his own, about 400 employees. And he was like, trust me, the trainers we bring in, we'd rather listen to you and learn from you anyway. So I said, well, that's okay. If you say so, then okay, that's what I need to hear. So I did it. And to be honest, the first few training sessions and individual one-on-one coaching sessions I delivered, it was like, I didn't know I could achieve that level of happiness. Like, it was just so, I was so excited. And so I enjoyed the experience so much. And then after that, they paid me on top of it, which was like, I would have done this for free, right? Like, it was, the whole thing was, and again, I didn't think that was possible. So I kind of happened upon it by fluke. But over my years now as a coach, working with other individuals, helping them navigate their situations and achieve their own happiness and achieve their own success and self-accomplishment, I've learned that, yeah, sometimes it's not as clear. And some people need a little bit more of a, some people need a push, and some people need to kind of that perspective to see what direction they want to go in. And sometimes it's more difficult than others to detach. Everyone's kind of unique in their own situation. But I look back, honestly, I that's one of the blessings I had in my life, was I was very fortunate at a somewhat young age to realize, man, this is incredible. This, if I can continue doing this, I'll be a happy camper.
Yep. Yeah. Well, that's a great story. And that's interesting how that played out. And the fact that you recognized it early on, and that's a, and you mentioned that, and that's leads me down a path here. I'm thinking, you talk about having mentors, coaches, whatever the case may be. And you had no mentor growing up. I didn't either, really, outside of people that I read or listen to, okay, I'm going to go way back now, CDs and, mm-hmm. and cassette tapes. You remember those things where you had to have,
yeah.
A number two lead pencil with you to try to, you know, make it work and get the
twist it back into, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Twist
yeah.
it back in, yeah, yeah. That whole thing. Of course, I go back to the days of 8-track, so I'm getting really old. But anyway, the thing about cassettes is you could like fast forward it easier than you could 8-track, so that was always cool. But anyway. You know, I'm getting old. You know, the things you get excited about when you're 16. But you know, not having a coach myself in the past, or really a mentor. Tell me the importance of that, because I think you touched on it. But it for business to business owners, for business owners, I should say, that would be listening. It's easy, I think, a lot of times, because I'm the owner, so I am expected to know everything. I need to know everything. And it's almost like we could feel like as business owners, it's a sign of weakness that we're asking for help, because why do I need help? I'm supposed to be I'm the CEO, I'm the president, I'm the owner, I'm the whatever. And mm-hmm. a little bit is they feel like it's a sign of weakness, maybe. I don't think it is. I don't think saying I don't know something and I need some help is actually more a sign of strength than it is a sign of weakness. But what do you say to that when people say I don't know that I need anybody or I'm afraid to have somebody because of how that may look?
Okay, so I'll tell you the honest to God truth answer, and then okay. I'll tell you like what I'm thinking. The honest to God truth answer is if folks say that to me, which happens, like a friend of mine will refer me to someone else and we'll hop on a call and they'll tell me, yeah, Ryan, listen, I honestly don't think I need a coach. I think I'm okay. And my response is always that's fine. No problem. If you ever change your mind or if you're ever at a crossroads and you don't know what to do, if you want to just hit me up, ask me a quick question or hop on a call, I'm happy to do that for you. You know, no problem. But the truth is that, I mean, it is a stigma. You're correct. I agree with that. Tom Brady is the most accomplished athlete pretty much of all time. Mm-hmm. And when he was playing up until his final year, he had 9 coaches. Okay. So, I mean, really, what does Tom Brady get to learn? He's got 9 coaches, right? It's not, I wouldn't say it's so much to learn. I mean, with ascending leaders, when I do those type of leadership coaching, it is a little bit of, you know, kind of helping them to navigate the new or how to, I guess, interact with the new dynamics. Your former peers, now they're your subordinates. So there does have to be some change that can create some conflict if you don't know how to approach that and use the proper, you know, communication style. But overall, the most of the time it's to help be, I don't want to say a sounding board, but kind of like more like a mirror and to help clarify your situation, help you focus on the priorities that need your attention rather than treating everything like it's priority 1A and just constantly putting out fires. It's helping to redirect that focus and helping to see the picture a little bit more clear, because those high performers, those people who own their own businesses and they have already achieved a level of success, they have, some of them get into this action bias where they just check off the list, go through their criteria, their to-do list, and they crush it all, which is great. But at sometimes it's almost like climbing up a ladder that it's against the wrong wall. Right? It doesn't give them the best return on their time. And I think that's, to be honest, that's a lot of the value that I bring to the executives I work with, is I help them to refocus their priority list and to help them kind of refresh so that they attack it with, I guess, renewed vigor, and at the same time, an enhanced perspective and a rich perspective, so that they're accomplishing a couple things with the same task.
You know, I love that visual you just had, because that really struck, you know, and I may not say it the way you said it, but, you know, they're climbing up the ladder very quickly, but it's on the wrong wall, right? I mean, there's so many other things they could be doing with more value to their time and to their organization, but it's like with anything, I go back to a lot of the things that I do now, a lot of that I talk about and podcast about and write about is more of a hybrid sales plan, right? Using old school and new school. And I think about it from the standpoint that before COVID, and it's amazing that that's just a whole interesting concept when I say that, because, you know, we talk about that as an era, right? Which is just an oddity a little bit to me. But anyways, pre-COVID, without that, we wouldn't be doing this today, because I would have probably never made the step into doing a lot of the different new, unique areas that bring visibility equals opportunities, a statement I use a lot, and I really think it does. If it wasn't for the fact that I was forced into it and forced to step out of a comfort zone, because I was very, very, very good as a relationship building, travel the roads, kissing babies, bro hugging, burgers and beers in the evening, you know, building that relationship one at a time. Mm-hmm. That even though at the time I probably knew maybe there's some ways to do things a little better, some way to maybe augment my how I do it the old school way. But I think when you hit some reasonable amount of success at what you're doing, I'm going to keep doing what I do. I'll just do more of it, whatever that of it is, right? Mm-hmm. Instead of looking outside of the box. And I think that was the biggest thing that came out of that whole 3-4 year process, was that adaptability and the understanding that there is a whole nother way of doing things sometimes if you just get out of your own mind, get out of your own way, and take a shot at it. And I think a lot of business owners can fall into that trap, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like you said, they fall back on their habits, which like we just have brought them success. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I mean, there's that famous book, you know, what got you here won't get you there. And I see this oftentimes with like a star performer who's, let's say, you know, that just an all-star salesman or salesperson, and they get promoted to sales manager, and now they're running a sales team and they're not hitting the numbers because now their job is more to support and delegate and help their team rather than it is to just close the sale themselves. And that's a different skill set. But sometimes people take these things for granted. Overall, with that analogy, like I said, climbing up the ladder that's against the wrong wall, I think some people have like an action bias as well. Like it's easy, it's tangible. We're getting this done. But is that, are you getting it done just because it feels good to check it off and to say that I got this done versus a task that you're not going to get to check it off because it's more of like a brainstorming session, or it's, I have to craft this email. I don't know how long it's going to take me, but over here I can just click this off right away. So I'll do this instead.
Right.
So sometimes priorities get adjusted based on people's comfort level with them. And what it takes is someone like myself or another coach to help to kind of clarify, like break it down into steps or make it formulaic for them. So it's not as daunting or it's not a question mark. It's very, you know, on rails and it'll be easier to do. However, I do say this to the business owners out there, and I've run up against this quite a bit. You have to be comfortable with if you're going to hire a coach or a trainer or a consultant, you have to be comfortable with them, especially when it comes to people skills. Because if you're not comfortable with them and there's no trust, there's no rapport, then it's going to be very difficult to implement, to heed any of their advice and to see any results. And it's challenging out there, I know, because, I mean, there are, like, let's face it, there are poor trainers and poor coaches out there. I mean, really anyone can call themselves a trainer. You don't need any special certification for it. So it is a little bit of a crapshoot sometimes, but do your due diligence as best you can, meet them beforehand, and like I said, try to get a read on them. But ultimately, at the end of the day, sometimes I've come across people who've been burned before and who have been kind of led astray, dare I say. And those people, when they come to meet me, they're initially a little bit, there's some trepidation, and I understand 100%. Right. I would be the same way. If I bought a car and it was a lemon and I went to another car salesman and they said the same thing as the last one, I'd be skeptical as well.
Right.
So there is a degree of that happens. But I'm telling you, if you find a good trainer, a good coach, they really can be a force multiplier in your business. They can really streamline and enhance your human capital, your people, and that those are the people who are, those are the team that's going to carry the day.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. And I've been blessed to meet and know a lot of coaches and trainers, and have utmost respect for what you guys do. And I think that, like you said, I get quasi free coaching by interviewing so many great coaches, right? I'm sneaking it in. I'm doing it on the cheap, right? I interview them for 30, 40 minutes and steal all kinds of great stuff. See?
That's it.
But, mama didn't raise no fool. So let's talk about your book. We got it up on the screen there. Tell us about your book.
Yeah, thank you. So it's called The Effective Presenter, and it essentially, in a nutshell, is what it's, I'll tell you what it is, and I'll tell you about the impetus beforehand. I'm trying to organize it in my mind. Ultimately, so the book is meant as a playbook, as a guide to anyone who's never done a presentation or who has done some presentations, but they realize they can use an upgrade. And it's meant to kind of step-by-step, it's built in a framework of how to approach, how to attack any presentation to give you the highest degree of success. So it starts off with analyzing what your purpose is, what outcome you want to achieve, who your audience is, how much time do you have to do it, and then you progress that. So those three are the foundation, those three components, and they basically inform the rest of your design, your delivery, everything else. So that's in a nutshell what the book does. It goes through a bunch of delivery tips and strategies. And then at the end, it has some anxiety reduction, some nerve control, because, you know, some folks get nervous public speaking in front of others and such. But the reason I created it was also, like you said, it was just before the pandemic. It was just for COVID. And a lot of my clients, I started to grow, and then I couldn't be in everywhere at once. And some of the questions I were dealing with were just basic questions. So like, you know, for a pitch, should I start with this, or should I start with the market, or should I start with the product? Should I start with the solution, or should I start with the problem? So I said, you know what, I'm just going to make a book so that people can refer to it in my absence. If I can't be everywhere, that they can refer to it. And it's done well. It's been very successful. I'm very grateful for it. But the most surprising thing I found is the amount of people who have applied it in different situations, which I didn't think was possible. For example, in an interview, or in a sale, or in, like I said, it was meant for the persuasive presentations, like pitches, investment pitches, and then also for like all hands meetings, for informative presentations, for things like, for leaders, so that they can speak with their team and clarify kind of the objectives, and people are all on the same page at the same time, improve the results. But I was shocked at how many, the feedback I've gotten was like, yeah, it really helped me get my next job. I thank you for the interview help. I was like, whoa, okay. I didn't know it could be used as an interview tool or for a sales tool. But yeah, in essence, that's kind of that's a nutshell of it.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's I think that one of the things you just said, which is interesting, is probably with presentations, it's scares the hell out of people, right? People, I mean, people, unless you're a polished politician or entertainer, and we all hear the stories of entertainers that literally throw up off stage before they go on stage, right? I mean, it's still, I don't care how long somebody's done it at whatever level, there's probably a certain amount of anxiety with speaking in public. But I've heard the story, but or the number, but it's like one of the scariest things in the world is public speaking, right? And do you think that's because of lack of preparation or a fear of, for lack of a better term, I'm going to go real high tech here with the term, but I'm going to look stupid, I'm going to embarrass myself, or is it a combination of all the above, do you think?
Yeah, so according to the research, and I had to bring in some of the research, Randy, I'm sorry, but I'm a professor, so we're grounded a lot in research. So according to the research, it's an evolutionary thing. Evolutionarily, when we, like, you know, 10,000 years ago, if we were on our own in front of 10, 15, 20 strangers, we might be in a threat, we might be in a dangerous situation that we'd need to get out of. So our brain would be, you know, going into fight or flight mode, releasing that adrenaline to get us out of the situation and prepare us to survive, because, you know, we might be threatened. That our brain hasn't adapted as quickly as society has. So we still have that part. So the rule is three. If we're outnumbered by more than three people who we don't know, our brain starts to release a little bit of adrenaline. And when that happens, then we start getting the nerves. And that's when, you know, people experience a myriad of symptoms, such as, you know, dry mouth, sweating, palms, everything else under the sun. So, yeah, by the way, I didn't mute on that one, Randy. You should get your money back for the headset.
Oh, I did? Oh,
that's okay.
I didn't go up far enough. That's the problem.
But anyways, yeah, so it's ultimately that. And then a number of the fears come in, like you said, fear of judgment, fear that we're going to look foolish, fear of we're going to be basically cast out, anything like that. That all comes into play. But I mean, public speaking has always been a great fear. The exposure is the answer. The more you practice, the more you rehearse, the more you speak in front of people, the less and the less of the adrenaline that you'll feel, and less it'll hit you. In a sale, I've seen it with, I mean, I'm sure you have too, with very junior entry-level sales folks who are in their first sale, or they feel like it's a make or break deal. It will impact their approach, their delivery, maybe their word choice. Have you ever seen that firsthand? Have you ever been with like someone, like maybe a junior salesperson, and watched them kind of fumble a little bit because of the nerves?
Oh yeah. You can see it's almost, you feel sorry for them. And you wonder back, was that me 25, 30, 40 years ago? Probably was. Right. But yeah, it's almost embarrassing. Yeah. I've seen that, and you feel bad for them because I don't find in a sales, you know, in a one-on-one or one-on-two or three or five, I love talking with people. I love presenting. Mm-hmm. When you get a little bit bigger groups, it's almost like a little bit bigger group than a smaller group. And I think that's only because it takes the personal out of it, it seems like, and it's just a group now. Hmm. You know, when there's five people, all these people might start firing questions at you, might start challenging you, might start, you know, disagreeing with what you say. The likelihood of a talk, if you will, as opposed to just a presentation, is that most people don't interrupt that stuff. Mm-hmm. Most people just listen and then get out of the room, whether they like you or they dislike you. I think that to me, I would rather speak with a larger group than a real small group, if I had a choice between the two. Not that I mind either one particularly, but it's an interesting, the whole concept of that is pretty interesting, and I'm sure that your book will help people get through that fear of that, because the more you know, with anything, you know, there's the fear of the unknown, right? The fear, am I going to get blasted by somebody? The fear, am I going to embarrass myself? The fear, am I going to forget something? And like you said, of that, the exposure, the more times you make the same sales presentation, or the more times you make the same talk on a subject, the fear factor should go down, right? Because, you know, I'm not going to mess this up. I mean, I've done it 27 times.
And if you do mess it up, it's, you know, you've done it before. It's not the end of the world, right? It's like all those things come into play. My theory is, from what you've told me, that you prefer a larger group, a little bit larger than the smaller, most likely because when you've had a smaller group before, you've seen some of those, you've had some. So it's your experiences, right, that are kind of shaping your preferences now, which is totally fine. But that's, again, it's like it's human nature. So absolutely, preparation is extremely important. The more prepared you are, then the more confident you'll feel. What my book was meant to do, and I believe it does do this, I think that's part of the reason it has achieved the success it has, is it kind of puts you at ease in terms of, okay, I followed all the steps. I answered every question. There's nothing I could have done that I didn't do. So therefore, anything that gets thrown at me, like any kind of a curveball or anything I don't know, I'm not expected to know, and that's okay. Like I've set myself up for success, so to speak. And as a bonus, if you listen to the audio version on Audible and everywhere else audio versions are available, you'll hear my lovely voice narrating it myself, because I just felt like I like to talk and I wanted to do it. So just, sure. I felt like I should mention that as well.
No, and I think, you know, that's interesting that you brought that up, because I think, I like books in audio version that's read by the author.
Me too.
I think there's, I don't, as we talked, I think when I was on with you, I'm quickly approaching being done with my first book. And if I do an audio, I won't do it unless I read it myself. I've already determined that.
Yeah.
That because I think it would be like, to me, If there's this guy that went through some catastrophe, some event, and is telling you the story versus a paid actor to play his part, it's not the same, right?
Yeah, I feel that. You know? I feel that. And I understand that's a difficult one for me, because I do know, like, the world's pretty much split in half. Like, I think there's like 49% writers and readers, and there's 49% speakers and listeners, and there's like 2% that do both equally. But usually people are prone one way or the other. So some people feel like they can express themselves better in writing, and I respect that. But for me, like you said, for the listener, because I'm a listener, I want to feel the emotion behind the words. I want to feel like that. Part of it is in the tone, not just in the word choice and the phraseology, if you will.
And I think so. I think it's 100%. You nailed it better than I did with that. I think that's that. It's the emotion and the tone. You wrote the book. Those are your feelings, your ideas, your baby, right? You're always going to be, in my opinion, be able to deliver that better than a paid speaker who may do a better job from a standpoint of all the correct speaking nuances, right? Because that's what they do. They're paid to do that. That's their profession. But I'm listening to the book to get the real word of Ryan, right? And I want, and so much of that comes from your tone and your emotions and how you deliver it, more than just the words themselves, right? And so that would be my take. But
yeah, I'll tell you, I know you want to talk about sales. Just a quick word on this. So I've also written a couple textbooks for Oxford University Press, and a lot of them are on advanced speaking and listening skills. Hmm. And one of them, they asked me to write some scripts that there was like a video that complemented one of the chapters. And by the way, these are textbooks for higher education, like university students. Mm-hmm. So one of them, I wrote, I think, scripts that they would then pay an actor to, you know, deliver while, you know, the visual aids are being presented behind them, for example. And I found myself, after watching the actor, having to go back to the script and put in brackets, smile when you say this, you know, pause briefly before this, okay. Because for me, it's just, you know, like you said, I wrote it, so I know how it's meant to be conveyed and delivered. Right. But for others, it doesn't have the same. Anyway, I'm just particular. I feel like it doesn't have the same. So I like when authors read their own.
Yeah, I agree. Good stuff. Well, Ryan, I know you got lots to do besides talk to me, and you probably got to go teach a class or something here again today. But what? By the way, we never brought this up, and I should, and I forget. But what university are you a professor at?
It's McMaster University in Hamilton, Ontario.
Okay. Perfect. So as we wind down, and I appreciate your time and your friendship. You know, there's frequently asked questions, but there's the should ask questions. So what when you're talking to people like me or just anybody on the street about what you do, do you wish somebody would just ask and never ask? Is there something that you're just like dying to talk about that nobody ever seems to bring up in a conversation? Or if nothing else, what do you want to end this discussion with? What did we miss today?
I think what some people should ask that they don't, and I do think a lot of times it's not that they're focused on the wrong thing. I mean, sometimes it is. So I have had executives where they come to me and they want to achieve a certain outcome, and they're just focused on how do we get there. So they'll come to me if it's change management and they're doing a full, you know, changing of all the systems and in the organization, and they'll come to me and say, you know, what do I need to say to these people to get them to understand, when really the question should be is, how do I approach this situation? Does everyone need to receive the same message, or should different parties receive a different message? Should it be all at the same time? Like the approach, the strategy is more important. And then to piggyback on that, I think what most people should be concerned with is more the how than the what or the why. I think the how gets kind of taken for granted the most. And people think they can find out what they need to do and they can find out why they need to do it. But the how is often left as, I don't know, just like a question mark, just as an expectation, like, oh yeah, you'll know how to do it. For example, presentations, right? Like, you know, to tell people all the time, you're next week, we need you to give a presentation on update the finances for Q2. Like, okay. It's just expected that they know how to do it. And they won't ask, okay, how do I do this? It's okay, what do I need to do? And then why should I do it? Okay. So I think the how gets lost a lot. And I think people should ask that more often. And I think of yourself in terms of, because right now I'm in a big individual find your own path, achieve your own level of success kick. I'm actually working on another book to that end, of a kind of a self-improvement type thing. I think that oftentimes people, you need to not so much change. You got to determine what you need to change about yourself to get where you want to go, and what you need to accept and embrace about yourself. Because there's certain things about yourself that you might, you know, wish you could change, but they're really a value add. They're really an asset. And if you see it that way and you accept it and you can lean into it, then it can be really powerful. So I know some of those things are in the gray area, and I like to try to clarify as much as I can, but those would be my final words.
Beautiful. Good words. Well, Ryan, I appreciate, I appreciate your friendship. I appreciate you coming on today to chat about your book and about your thoughts on presenting, on doing business, on sales in general, and coaching. I thought that was some good chat on coaching and training. And just thank you for being on. I appreciate you.
Oh, Randy, it's been my pleasure. I hope I gave your listeners some value. And yeah, I'm looking forward to chatting more in the future.
Oh yeah, anytime, we'll do it. You to me, I kind of like you. I like to talk.
For sure. Yeah, we're good.
Yeah. All right, buddy. Thank you again, my friend.
You're welcome.
All right. Take it easy. Cheers. All right, folks. Ryan Warner, man, I'll tell you what, that's some good stuff. Follow him on LinkedIn for sure. Check out his book. It's really good stuff, and you'll enjoy it. And we talked about this a little bit earlier today in the podcast. And remember, live it, love it, own it. And man, we talked about today, but love what you do and do what you love. Remember that 20 minutes of suck? If it becomes 20 minutes of suck, becomes 20 days, becomes 20 years, figure it out, because there's no way to live. So figure it out. And go make today your best day ever. Until tomorrow. Cheers, my friends.
Thank you for listening to Building Wins Live. You can find information on Randy, Wes, our guests, show notes, and anything related to the podcast at buildingwins.live. On behalf of the whole Building Wins team, don't forget, make today your best day ever. Until tomorrow.